Are you looking for inventory this time of year?
I have just the answer. It's called The List. Yep, that's it. The List. It's a premium sourcing service brought to you by Andy Slammons, where you get quality, actionable inventory from real sellers. These are million-dollar-plus sellers who bring you the finds in real time. Oh, and by the way, they're buying them themselves. Bring your business to the next level with The List. There are a few openings, but it's capped at 100, and they're so close, but you still can get in if you sign up now at thelistishere.com. Thelistishere.com. Oh, and make sure you tell Andy I sent you.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 168, Chris Potter. You know, this is the second time I've had Chris on the show, and first time I had him on was way back in November of 2015. It was episode 44. And I suggest that if you've not listened to that episode, you stop this one and go back and listen to episode 44, because the context you'll get about Chris and his journey to get him to where he is today, and he's a very successful seller today, but this isn't the first time he was a very successful seller. And the story, I think, is such a great story. I think it's so worth listening to. So go back, listen to episode 44, and then come back here, and let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Man, I'm excited about tonight's guest because it's been such a long time since he's been on. He was episode 44, which blows my mind to think about that, back in November of 2015. It's incredible. Great guy, Chris Potter. Welcome back, Chris.
Hey, how's it going, Stephen? It's definitely been a while, and I have lots of changes going on, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'm excited to talk about those changes because, you know, people need to go back. I mean, you know, Chris is an open book on his life, and you need to go back and listen to Chris's episode 44 for perspective. So I suggest if you've never heard Chris's story, stop this. Go back and listen to episode 44 first, because that'll give you a perspective on the type of guy Chris is. Chris has had a huge Amazon business. How many employees did you have way back in the day in your first run at it?
Our highest point was 22 employees.
Okay, 22 employees, big warehouse, big system, and it imploded. And he walks you through it, right through it honestly and openly and candidly, and explains what went wrong. And but the phoenix rises from the ashes, and he had a great year in 2015. So I'm expecting to hear how 2000, although I will give a little caveat, we did see each other a few times this past year, so I kind of do have a little bit of a clue how you're doing. But 2016 better than 2015?
I guess it depends on what type of perspective we're talking to and better. I would say if we're looking at a pure revenue perspective, we actually declined, and the reason why is because in 2015, and basically the entire year of 2015, we were doing a lot of drop shipping.
Oh, okay.
And so we actually stopped doing drop shipping in 2016, roughly the second week of February, right around there, and we went fully into FBA.
So let's explain to people who don't know what drop shipping is, because there actually are different methods of drop shipping. What was the one that you were using specifically?
The specific one we were using is the one that you're not supposed to use on Amazon, which is drop shipping from retailers.
Okay. So you would buy something at Walmart.com and send it to Steve and when he ordered it. And it would never, you know, I ordered a pair of socks from you on Amazon. You would get it from Walmart.com and send it to me, correct?
That's the general philosophy.
Okay, that was a philosophy. Yes. Okay. And that's a no-no, right? And so that was a change you made. And but you had some real success at it.
Yeah, I mean, we did roughly $2.4 million in 2015, and most of it, probably about 75 to 80% of it, was all drop shipped.
What's the reason that somebody would want to drop ship as opposed to a wholesale model, or, you know, even a retail arb, OAR, private label? What's the reason that somebody would want to drop ship?
Probably the easiest explanation for that would be it's very easy to run through working capital that way. Like, for example, in December of 2015, there was one point where I had probably about $150,000 on one credit card. And you can churn the money so quickly because you're effectively selling the item, and that's when you're buying it. and then you're getting money back from Amazon to pay down your credit cards. So you don't have any sort of holding fees. You don't have any sort of rule of working capital you have to deal with, other than having credit card availability of funds.
Okay. So you're basically using kind of air money, right? I mean, it's really not there, yep. right? It's air money. And in theory, you could get points off. You can get, you know, if you got, you know, like cash, if a company gave you cash back or whatever, you could get those bonuses and then make the difference between the two. How did you handle the price changes? You know, so for example, let's just use my socks. You know, when you were buying them, when you were selling them for $20 and you were buying them for $10 on Walmart, what happens when Walmart changed the price to $15 or down to $5? What happened?
We had software built that would actually handle those changes, but there were times where we would get an order in and we were unable to place the order quick enough on the site before the price went down. And those cases, we would just end up eating the difference on it.
Okay. And so sometimes you win, sometimes you lose in the long run. What kind of margins does a, you know, I hope you don't mind, these are two personal. If they do, you just tell me to stop. What kind of margins does a drop shipper, well, I guess then what would a drop shipper have got versus today if there's a difference? And I don't know that there is. I'm just asking.
I would imagine that that's probably close to the same, but a good chunk of the profit was actually in cashback from cashback sites. That's where a lot of the profits were at. Mm. So we're talking, you know, depending on the site, it could be 5%, could be 10%. And then we would see maybe 5% margin on the actual products themselves.
Okay. So let's just pause on that. Yeah. I want to pause on that for a second because I know a lot of people are very like, how do people make money? You know, they're buying it. How do they make money? So you just heard Chris say that one way somebody is making money, which I'm assuming people are still doing this, right or wrong. And they're making money two different ways. You're making money on the cashback site, assuming that everything works out perfect and they're paying you, assuming that, right? And then you're making a small profit on the other side. How did you pay for staff? I guess you really didn't need to because you didn't touch the product, right? Is that the other art of it?
The staff that you need mainly comes from two areas. One of them is customer service for sure because it's all merchant fulfilled and you have to handle those aspects. And when we're talking about customer service, we also have to place all these orders on the retailer sites, which okay. is a task in itself. And then you have the third side, which is actually matching up products in Amazon's catalog versus the actual sites, the actual online sites.
All right, I'm going to beat the horse a little more because I'm just always, you know, I have an inquisitive mind. So what type of person and where would they be located for each of those different roles?
Pretty much all of those roles were outside of the U.S. They
okay.
were in the Philippines.
So you can use an VA from the yeah. Philippines to do that. Okay, all three roles. Okay, wow. Wow. That's a lot of moving pieces. Didn't always work right, I'm assuming.
I wanted to pull my hair out in December of 2015. It's one of the reasons why I decided to stop going through that method, not to mention the actual risk of doing it. Because at any given time, Amazon could have come down the banhammer on it and say, you know, this is a problem. So that's because it is specifically against Amazon's terms and conditions to do what I'm doing. So listen to me now, do not do it because it's specifically against Amazon's guidelines.
Okay.
At the time, it was a risk I was willing to take because at the time I was coming back from, which if you listen back to the other podcast, I was coming back from not having a whole lot of working capital because my working capital is all tied up in my old business that disappeared.
Right.
So I had to try and generate working capital, and that was a very easy way to generate working capital.
And you wouldn't do it again?
No.
Okay. Has Amazon made any changes now that make that whatever that system was more challenging, or do you think it's exactly the same?
Knowing I actually know specific competitors that do the exact same thing we were doing, but at probably 20 times scale of what we were doing or 50 times scale of what we're doing, and they're all still on there.
No kidding.
So, yeah, so we're talking that policy that I know of has actually been in place for at least a year and a half, if not longer. And none of the big retail dropshippers that are obviously doing it have been taken down or done anything with them.
Let me ask you this question. This is probably an uncomfortable question. Have you had to compete against a drop shipper now, knowing, because you could tell who they are? I have no clue who they are. You could probably tell who they are. Have you had to compete against them now with product that you purchased and then had to try to sell against them? And how has that worked out?
Yes. Really where we really had to battle on them is when you would see a case where a retail website would drop the price for maybe a day or two on sales, which then in turn causes the retail dropshippers all to drop their prices.
Okay.
And when that happens and you're at FBA pricing, typically that causes a problem for a day or two, but then you see the price jump back up. And then you see then you end up seeing the FBA seller and getting the buy box back.
Okay. So, and so I want to make sure I'm clear on this. These dropshippers are coming up as merchant fulfilled, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so now that Amazon is allowing merchant fulfilled to have the buy box, it could be exacerbating the system a little bit, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we were getting the buy box back, back in 2015 too. I mean, really the best items we actually did the best with were items that FBA sellers wouldn't touch, which what I'm referring to are items that are extremely high ranked items that Amazon themselves sells a ton of, and they're highly competitive on price. And so what happens is an FBA seller pretty much stays away from those.
Well, give an example of one. Is it a bicycle, or give me something that I could get context.
One that comes out right off the top of my mind was just like a humidifier.
Okay.
It's a humidifier that Walmart sells for $50, and Amazon was undercutting them on a regular basis for about $48. And my guess is the wholesale price on it was probably in the $30 to $40 range. So No one really wanted to touch it because Amazon just dominated that listing. But what you would see is you would see, 5, 6, 7, 8 retail dropshippers on that same exact listing as merchant fulfilled. And as soon as Amazon runs out of stock of that item, then the buy box basically goes to the next highest person, which is all merchant fulfilled people who are basically drop shipping from retailers.
And they're selling that for how much?
Likely. Maybe 70 bucks.
Okay, so 70 bucks. Probably getting free shipping from Walmart.com, right? Because it's over a certain dollar amount.
Yep.
Okay, so they're shipping it to Steve. I got my, Steve paid $70 for it. The Amazon fees on something like that would be what? What would you say?
Because all you're paying is a 15% commission, so you're talking maybe $10.
Okay, because there's not a shipping charge there, right? Because they're adding the shipping to it generally, right? I don't know how they break it out, right? They would say it was $62 and $8 shipping, right? So the total was 70. But really, there was no shipping because it was free. So they're paying $10. So they got $60 and spent $50. So they made $10 there. And then in addition, they got a cash back from buying that item for 50 bucks, correct?
Yep. They're probably getting maybe 3% cash back. And you can also get gift card discounts if you're really savvy. You can get gift card discounts as well. And then, of course, if you actually pay for the gift cards with a credit card, then you can also stack that as well. So, I mean, realistically, on the back end, you could get another 10% or 8%, somewhere around there. In some places, it could be even higher than that.
So, 10%. So another $4 to $5 there. So they could, in theory, make $15 for a $50 cost. Well, really, no cost. I mean, really, they can make $15 for doing that work.
Correct.
And it doesn't sound like a lot of money because you got to pay three people or so, whatever. But if you scale that and make that a significant business, it sounds pretty lucrative.
It is. But like I said, it's an extremely difficult and hair pulling business to get into. So it's not one I would recommend.
Okay. All right. Well, I beat the horse because I wanted to understand it. You absolutely explained some things I did not understand. So I really appreciate that. So you realize that that's not a life that you want to live. What was your thinking? I mean, other than the craziness of December, I mean, if your business hadn't failed the first time, you wouldn't have gone that route, correct? I mean, that wasn't your goal, was to be that. You wanted to start back to a real, sustainable business, right? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's always been the goal.
Okay. And so you were able to get back in that business in February, the second week of February. You were reborn.
Yep. Yeah, so, second week of February of 2016 is when we pretty much did a full shift into full FBA and dump the drop shipping.
So what does that mean? Is that an RA model, OA model, wholesale model, all of the above?
Yes, all of the above.
Okay.
We had been doing some retail arbitrage, some online arbitrage previously to when we were drop shipping, but there just wasn't a whole lot of revenue coming off of that. I mean, mm-hmm. in December, I think we maybe did, I don't know, like $40,000 of revenue from retail arbitrage, and online arbitrage, and wholesale. So it wasn't a whole lot.
So you've had to then take and add staff, right? So you had to start building a team again, right? Because this is a U.S.-based team for the retail side and the wholesale side. The online orb, are you still able to use VAs from the Philippines or wherever from?
Yeah, we use VAs for every step of the process that I possibly can. Okay. I'm a very process-oriented guy.
Okay.
So my goal is to try and outsource as much as I possibly can to the cheapest people possible. So there are aspects of wholesale that can be done with. There's aspects of online arbitrage that can be done with. And even on the retail arbitrage side, I actually have a VA who makes all my retail arbitrage buying decisions.
Well, let's talk about that. So, you know, I was thinking about, you know, Gary Baird was telling me one time that he's able to use his retail arb team and they use WhatsApp to communicate. So when you're in the store, it actually helps you tell, you know, what to get. So walk us through what somebody in the Philippines could do other than having a WhatsApp. What would they do to help somebody in the retail arb business?
Well, this is actually a system that I devised a while ago, and there's some people in the Facebook groups that specifically call it the Potter system.
Mr. Potter. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Basically, what I do is I effectively turn retail arbitrage into a tactical arbitrage type of method that you use for online arbitrage. So what I mean by that is I actually have an independent contractor that goes into stores. They will physically scan all the items in the store with pricing with it. That information is then sent to the VA. The VA then actually does bulk lookups on all of those UPC codes and prices, and it makes determinations on which items to buy, and then creates shopping lists for the actual shoppers here in the U.S., and then the shoppers just go in and just physically buys the items off the shopping list.
So how many items, if I was a shopper for you, how many items would be on my shopping list generally? And how many stores? Yeah.
Generally, we will scan roughly maybe 1,500 to 2,000 UPCs in a week. And off of that, we might buy maybe 150.
So 10%.
150, yeah, 10% maybe. And then the quantities we buy, we kind of spread things really wide and not deep. So we would potentially buy as little as 3 to 4 units of an item if we could sell through those amount of units within 30 to 40 days.
Okay. So you're not saying, Steve, buy this pack of pens and buy every one you can find in every Walmart across the country. That's not your plan.
We would only do that on specific scenarios where we knew it was discontinued or, you know, other ones where it just make total sense to do that. But in general, we're talking that our major category we're doing this in is actually groceries. So okay. we actually gotten to the point to where we've actually have relationships with the specific store managers now of all the local locations. So now we can actually just go in and say, here's what we want to buy. And then they order them from their warehouses and they bring them in for us and we can buy them at their sale price.
Right. And you're not saying, give me a better deal. You're saying, hey, just honor your sale deal. They're moving the inventory. I love it.
Exactly.
And so how many, don't say the store names, but how many store, different stores would you go to? So brands?
We would go to 5 different types of brands.
And am I a specialist in one? I guess not, because I'm just a buyer, so it really doesn't matter. You're just telling me to go buy this jar of Prego sauce, 10 ounces, period, right? That's what you're telling me. Okay. And so,
yeah, which the key thing about that method is that it centralizes your buying with one person. So I can actually send out, you know, 3 to 4 different people to go buy these items, and you're not going to have the variances of people buying different types of items. You know, where one person might, even though if you train the exact same way, you're not always going to get the same buys from different people. And so having one centralized person be able to make those buying decisions makes the buying much more consistent and less variables, which also means that the people I'm sending into stores I can actually pay them a lower rate
mm-hmm.
because I don't have to have them making decisions in the stores. So right. I can
you're
literally
saying,
just.
Steve, you're going shopping anyway. Hey, could you pick these items up and I'll pay you a few bucks? That, I mean, that's
exactly.
very reasonable. And so, and it's also easier for you to coach that one person as opposed to trying to coach six different people, right? And the understanding and the communication, you're now dealing with one person specifically.
Correct.
How many hours a week does a shopper, a buyer, I guess that's the right term to use, how many hours a week would they work typically?
Maybe 20, 25 hours a week, something like
okay.
that.
Okay, to buy about 450 items, you said, right? 150 items, 3 to 4 a piece?
3 to 4 a piece would be like the lowest we would do.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we're, there's some cases where we'll buy hundreds of them, depending on what the expiration dates are and what the demand is, those type of things.
And, you know, as I sit and think about this, the Potter system probably is the right system for that type of thing because there are a lot of things you have to be concerned about. That expiration date is critical, right? I mean, that's a real big deal. And so when you're communicating with me to say, hey, buy that Prego sauce, are you reminding me to watch the dates or is that the other training piece that goes with the other team?
They specifically know exactly what time frame they have for dates that they're allowed to buy.
Okay. Wow. Now, they pick up this merchandise. Are they bringing it back to your place, to your warehouse, or are they bringing it to a different packer for you?
They bring it to our warehouse. We okay. have our own warehouse and staff. And that type of thing.
And so that's where you're scaling there. Now, are you shipping those in by the pallet, if possible?
What we end up doing, yes, we were shipping them by pallet, but it also kind of depended on the situation and the type of products we had, because as you probably know, especially during Christmas and other areas, if you're shipping in pallets, they take longer to check in.
Right.
So, you know, it would kind of depend on the type of product. One thing we're actually testing out right now, which we actually got in contact with UPS, which is actually a tip that you can. I'm not entirely sure whether it's going to work.
Pro
or
tip.
Not, but,
pro tip.
Yeah. Our actual UPS guy supposedly is getting us freight shipping for ground shipments.
Really.
Yes.
Well, that would be nice.
Yeah. And so they actually just got us set up with this probably a day or two ago. And we actually, because we finally got it set up about a week ago, and they'd set it up for one specific location, which was CVG. And so anything that was going from our location to that specific location, they had modified their rates to actually have them correct with their freight rates for that specific location because 95% of all of our shipments were going to that warehouse. Well, in between the time when we had talked to them and them, we started shipping a lot of stuff to a Charlotte warehouse in North Carolina now. So we weren't able – so because we didn't actually set us up for those rates for that particular location, we weren't able to – the rates just weren't right. So he actually came in yesterday and reset something back up to try and get it. And he was, and the UPS guy was back in today trying to fix something. So supposedly that is what it is. So don't guarantee me or, you know, quote me that this is, you know, godlike, but it's definitely something that you might want to look into and ask about.
Well, let me ask you a question. So this is a UPS rep that came in?
That's correct.
Okay. So you have a UPS account of your own.
Yep.
In addition to using Amazon's rates. And so how different have you experienced on the ones that were going to CVG? How different was the experience for you in rate?
The rates were less than the parcel rates that Amazon gives you.
Right. Which is, I don't know what you normally spend. So you're in North Carolina. So how far is that? I mean, typically I ship it. It's 33 cents a pound or something like that. 35 cents a pound. Is that, I mean, how close is that to what you were seeing in your parcel rate?
That's the exact rate that we're in a range of 30 to 35 cents,
okay.
and it dropped down to roughly 20 cents.
Okay, so that's material. So, 10 cents a pound is a lot of weight. I mean, a lot of money and a lot of pounds.
Yeah, it's still not nearly as good as what it was if you're sending it in full freight, because you're talking freight, you can get it down to, depending on how many pallets you're shipping in, it can go down as 2 cents a pound or 5 cents a pound.
Right, right.
So it's not quite as good, but it was a better rate than what we were getting even through Amazon.
Well, and the challenge is this, you know, is your fees are going up on the other side. So when you can start, you know, if you've heard any of my Young Gun series, there is a common theme amongst them all. They're basically not chasing growth anymore. They're chasing profits because they want that efficiency that they know they let go to chase, you know, gross sales. They want to take it out. These are the ways you do that. These small changes, and this isn't easy, right, Chris? I mean, this takes work, right? You got to talk with somebody. You got to keep changing and keep challenging. But this is where you can start squeezing out profits.
Yeah, you have to understand that we do a lot of volume too. So it's, if you're only shipping in a few boxes a week or something like that, don't expect to be able to just walk into UPS and say, "Hey, give me this great deal." They know that we're doing a ton of volume with them, so that's why they're potentially willing to do that. Because we talked to them about, how long it takes to do freight. And we told them that we're not even using UPS as a freight carrier. So their whole goal at this point is to try and gain our business, which I think is why they're offering us those rates.
Well, because they see that Amazon is using other services and they now know that, and so they have to be more mindful of that. Do you have any special setup for that? I mean, you have a loading dock and that. When you're giving to them those things, are you putting them in boxes when you're giving to them? You're not palletizing them.
Right, we're doing it. We're doing everything exactly the same as you normally would through a standard UPS freight through Amazon. The difference is that instead of using partner carrier, we use our own carrier, and we actually set WorldShip on our PCs to actually ship all of our packages out.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, man, I appreciate those details. Again, these are the small tweaks. Well, let me ask you this: are you chasing growth still in your business? I know you modified
Oh.
your business. I mean, are you chasing growth? What are you doing?
Without a doubt.
Okay,
Without
so
a
you're
doubt,
still in the
man.
growth phase. Okay, all right, that's fair. It's just you're at a different stage in your business, and that's what I love about this business. You're fitting that business for you, which might not be the same for Matt Kelly, right? And that's the beauty of it. To me, that's what I love about this whole business is that you can design it around what you want. Okay, so that's a big item. That's a big tip. What else worked in 2016 for you? What would you say was the reason that you had a less revenue,
Barely.
but you probably made more
Barely.
money?
That's correct.
Okay, so what else worked for you in 2016, other than turning off the drop shipping thing?
Well, we didn't just focus on retail arbitrage and arbitrage. We also focus on gaining wholesale accounts as well. Which again, in my old business, if you listen back to the other episode, my entire old business was 100% predicated on wholesale products. And so I have a ton of experience with wholesale. And the reason why it took me a little bit of time to get back into it was because of various reasons that I couldn't have a continuation of my old business coming to this business for various reasons. So initially, when I restarted back up, I couldn't actually really buy anything wholesale. It just wasn't an option for me. But now that the old business, it's now been almost 4 years since that business has been shut down. I have now that I've differentiated the business enough to where I can say, okay, I can start buying wholesale again. So we started buying wholesale middle of last year, utilizing the same methods I used, back in 2005 when I originally started doing wholesale with my first eBay business.
And so you've been able to get to that. What percentage of your business, looking back at 2016, would you guess was wholesale?
I would say it was probably roughly 20 or 30%, something
Okay.
like that.
That's a
And
lot.
it's somewhat skewed because we did so much retail arbitrage in December.
Okay. And plus, you didn't start it really until February. So you already lost the month of January. And then, as you say, in December, you went heavy retail. What do you think your goal for 2000? I don't want to jump too far ahead because we are going to talk about wholesale specific in the second segment. But what percentage are you shooting for in 2017 for wholesale?
Our goal between wholesale and private label is actually to start shifting it closer to 80%
Okay,
between
wow.
those two.
So this is material changes. I love it, love it, love it. All right, what else would you say really worked in 2016 that's given you the results? Because it's impressive. I mean, to be able to turn off the heroin needle of drop shipping, right? That I mean, it is. I could see it. I can understand why it's hard to turn off because not a lot of cash outlay. You're making money. It's turning fast. You've gotten away from it. I applaud you for that. And you're back to creating a real business, a real tangible, sellable business, right? I mean, you've got something that's real that somebody could buy. What else has really gone well for you?
Oh, I did hire. I hired an operations manager,
Hmm.
which he's in control of a lot of things. One of them is actually gaining wholesale accounts. So he's done a very good job as far as building great relationships with many different wholesale companies. And so that's been a big change. He also was in charge of the warehouse. And one thing that didn't go well, which you didn't ask me for this, but something that didn't
No,
go well
I'm going there, so go ahead. Yeah,
with
go for it. Hey,
Something,
this is what's supposed to happen, right? Things work, things don't. You figure it out. I love it.
yeah, so, something that didn't go well is because I had thrown a lot on his plate, and he was a lot, he was green in a lot of areas because I hired him, I think somewhere around maybe June, somewhere around there. So he was green going into Christmas, and we weren't staffed properly in the warehouse, and we had a lot of other issues that played into it. So at the end of Christmas, basically I just shut everything off and said, all right, here's what we're going to do now is we're going to specifically set processes, procedures, and we're going to write SOPs, we're going to redo training materials, and we're going to make sure that these problems that we had last year aren't going to happen again. So we pretty much just almost stopped buying and stopped everything for roughly 2 weeks where we actually started getting all these things into place. We redid our hiring process. We redid everything when it comes to processes and made sure it was all written down, make sure it's all in step-by-step process.
So like a reset, like a complete reset.
Yep.
Love it.
So
I think that's very healthy. I don't think that's a failure. To me, that's a healthy thing.
Yep, and we did that specifically to be prepared for the massive growth we're expecting to have happen going forward.
What's massive growth to you? I mean, would you 10X? I mean, are you looking to do 10X where you're at now? Because you got a pretty big number. Are you looking? Would you go that big? 5X? What are you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would
really?
Say over. Yeah, I mean, I actually created something called a vivid vision, which is basically a picture of what my company will look like at the end of 2019. And the top line number, which I think is actually conservative, was actually $10 million in revenue for that year.
No kidding. So that's your shot. It takes a special kind of person to run a $10 million company. I remember a few different interviews I've done with people at that level of business, and they say that it's a much different animal to run at those levels. Are you comfortable in that?
Yeah, I mean, really, what it boils down to when you start getting to higher dollar amounts, it's a matter of having the correct systems, processes,
right.
and culture.
Right.
And so that's what actually I've been mainly focusing on right now is starting to build that specific culture, building the specific processes in place so that when these growing pains start to happen, there's already processes in place to handle them.
I love it. All right. Well, I'm going to take a break because I want to catch my breath because you threw me with that number. In a positive way. And I want to talk more about 2017 and specifically the processes, the wholesale processes I'm really interested in that you're using to get to that next level. Okay? Be right back. You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-commerce. solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her. And most of the time, it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plates. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-commerce, the number 4, solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you. solutionsforecommerce.com. Man, what a great guy. What a great interview. You know, it just, I love, I love talking to Chris because he's so smart, but I love the way he breaks things down into processes. This segment, we get into a lot of specifics about wholesale and what he's doing, and he has a reason he's doing what he's doing, and it's kind of the payback because he realizes that he's been given a second chance, and so he's trying to help others, and I applaud his efforts. It's coming from the right place. He's got the right approach to it, and he's candid and honest about what he's doing. At the end, he's going to give you, my opinion, the best pro tip about life that anyone can give you, and I really suggest you listen right all the way to the end. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Chris Potter. And Chris, was a previous interview way back in November of 2015, and he was episode number 44, and it is such a great episode. I really ask you to go back and listen to that before you listen to this one, because it'll give you the perspective. And I think the best part of, I mean, you're a fighter, Chris. I mean, you don't lie down. I admire that about you. You're very positive, but you really tackle things, don't you? Has that always been your way?
It seems like it's just an uphill battle all the time, but you know, you got to keep a smile on your face and just keep pushing. That's what entrepreneurs do.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think it was an uphill battle this past year. I mean, you completely made a conscious change to your business and it worked. You came up with a plan, you executed on the plan, and you had a great year. I'm making it sound easy, but that's a big deal, dude. I mean, I applaud you. That's a big accomplishment. You should feel really good about yourself. I mean, really good.
I appreciate that. You know, sometimes when you look back at things you've done, and, you know, like in my case, when I ran a huge business, I was on the Inc. 5000 list at one point. You know, when you're looking at that scenario and it's like, only broke 2 million. It's like, eh. I know for a lot of people, they're like, holy crap, 2 million, that's right. A lot. How do I even get there?
Right. It's all perspective, right? I think that's the answer, is that it depends where you are. Well, from Steve's perspective, I applaud you and I think you've done well. Think about some of those businesses on the Inc. 500 that were on the Inc. 500. Many of them are not anymore. You know, think of the retail brick and mortars that are closing. You know, think of the bad decisions that were made in those businesses now that have affected tens of thousands of people, right? Their lives. And then the businesses that support those stores around there, all the restaurants that supported the staff and all the rest of, they're all affected. And so, you know, you were able to be successful. So I applaud you. All right, let's talk 2017. Let's talk wholesale. You are a wholesale guy. You really are ramping up your wholesale. Now, I know you said between private label and wholesale, you expect to be 80%. That's your goal. What percentage of that would be wholesale?
Wherever it lies, to be honest with you, realistically, I don't necessarily have a specific goal split between that. What I do have is I have specific goals based on how many wholesale accounts we should have by the end of the year and how many brands we should have. I just don't know, you know, who knows, maybe the branding aspect just takes off ridiculously and it might end up being half of that. I don't know.
Okay.
It just kind of depends when you start launching these products.
And so your goal on the private label side is to launch brands.
Yeah, the kind of the whole philosophy that I use for the wholesale side as well is to help out brands. And so what my end goal here is to potentially have an e-commerce site that has my own branded products right next to the actual branded products. And so pretty much it would look like, it could be a specific niche, it could be any niche you can really think of. But the theory being that we're going to run the same way that a Walmart does or a Toys R Us does, where you literally walk into a store and you're seeing a private label product directly next to the branded product.
And you make a choice based on, you know, you're looking at the ingredients, are they the same, you know, right? Is that, that's kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, and end goal is to go down that route so that way we have a customer base that we can just draw off of in a specific niche and potentially keep coming back and buying our products off of Amazon. That's the long-term goal. It's not necessarily what we're going to do in 2017, but that's a long-term strategy we're working towards.
So this website that you have, is it a Shopify type of site? Is that what you're thinking?
It will be, yes. It's a non-existent site currently.
Right, but it will be a Shopify type of site. But all the fulfillment done by Amazon, regardless?
It will likely probably be our own fulfillment at that point.
Oh, okay. Mainly so you'll scale to that level. Okay.
Yeah, mainly because we want to make sure that we can specifically brand our own packaging and have a brand around our actual e-commerce site, which you can't do through Amazon.
Right, and then you can control the customer information and you can control what they get and what they, you know, the contacts and that kind of thing, which makes a lot of sense. Okay. All right. Wow. That's a pretty aggressive plan. How do you propose to grow your wholesale business? So you had mentioned that you have an op manager and you are, part of his requirement is to bring in wholesale accounts. Walk us through, because you are tackling wholesale collectively. You are offering to help people get into wholesale, right? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Basically, over the years, I've come up with many different strategies of how to do this, and ultimately, the best ones boil down to creating relationships with specific manufacturers and brands. And what that means is that going basically all the way down to as far down to the source as you possibly can and building relationships with those companies and figuring out what their problems are. Hmm. And when I'm talking about their problems is, you know, as soon as you specifically say, yes, I sell on Amazon, then they start saying, oh, we don't ask for Amazon. We don't want Amazon people because of this, and this. They start just spouting off all these different problems. And that's kind of where the big difference between what we do and what probably 90% of our Amazon sellers do. 90% of our Amazon sellers would just walk away and say, okay, let's go on to the next one because I just want something easy I can just grab and resell really quickly. We're going to dig into that brand and say, yes, we agree. These are all ridiculous problems that Amazon has in their marketplace. And here's some ways we can potentially solve these problems. And just digging into what their problems are, whether it's, you know, they're having map pricing problems, maybe it's distribution problems, maybe it's something as simple as them not being able to just market a product properly on Amazon via pay-per-click advertising, or their listings just look terrible. We've even looked at off-site, non-Amazon type of advertising as well. So I'll take a look at their site, and I'll even give them ideas of how to actually drive traffic to their own site. So that way it shows I'm specifically invested in their brand as a whole and not just me trying to snag their product just to sell some on Amazon.
So are you teaching them? Would you teach them how to sell themselves on Amazon?
In general, we don't.
Okay, so how does that conversation go? I mean, is it because you're saying, hey, wait, that's not your model. You're not a retailer model. You're a wholesale business. I mean, how's that conversation go?
Well, we're actually retailing them. And in some cases, it kind of depends on what the person actually wants. Like, for example, I just had a person that was actually selling directly to Amazon through Vendor Express.
Okay.
And they were going through that way. They were paying, Amazon was paying a pretty good chunk of money at the wholesale cost for this product. And after looking at the account and seeing Amazon was doing no marketing whatsoever on it, the manufacturer actually had to, the brand owner actually had to pay for pay-per-click themselves through Vendor Express. Their listing wasn't good at all. They had no control over price because Amazon actually sets the price when you're through Vendor Express. Mm-hmm. And so there's all these different myriad
but it, reasons. Isn't also they have to take back the returns? Isn't there also that yep. caveat in there, right? So,
yep.
So by the time you get, I mean, so are you presenting it to that seller and saying, hey, have you looked at your real costs?
Yeah. In this particular example, you know, I said, all right, well, I did a little bit of research and I said, your top five competitors are doing roughly 7,000 units a year. You sold 400 last year.
There's the conversation. There's where yeah. you're dropping the mic right there. That's the exactly. conversation right there. That's their pain point, even if they don't know it, because they don't have the perspective. And so what are you using, like a Jungle Scout or something like that, to get the perspective of, to say, hey, this water glass, Steve, your competitor, and you can actually list a competitor. That person sold, you know, 5,200. This person sold 2,600. I mean, are you getting that specific with them?
Oh yeah, yeah. We'll use Jungle Scout. We'll also use FBA Toolkit in some cases to kind of help. If it's a category we're not necessarily familiar with,
okay.
We'll kind of use FBA Toolkit and then we'll kind of just combine the numbers and try and figure out a guesstimation. But yeah, I mean that's basically what we're doing. Is we're in some cases I even put together PowerPoint presentations and show.
That's
them.
A sophisticated conversation. I mean, it really is. I mean, that's a sophisticated conversation where you're saying, hey, look at this. They don't have access to the market data. You do, right? So, you know, everybody says that. We don't realize how much we take for granted that we know that nobody else does. And so I agree with you there. And so now you're bringing that back. And so that conversation, when you got my attention, when you said everybody else sold 10,000 and I sold 400, you now have my attention.
Yep. And at that point, it just kind of leads into, you know, here's some things I would recommend doing it. And we can go one of three methods. We can take over your Vendor Express account, potentially do some of these things, but we're, you know, hamstruck on some things. I basically just
like
lay
price.
Out the differences.
Right. The price.
Yeah, price is a big one. Right. You also can't do any sort of email sequence on the back end to attempt to get reviews. And so that's another problem as well. And that's a problem we can solve by, you know, saying, all right, stop selling to Amazon, sell to us. And we'll actually sell them on Amazon for you. And we'll take over the pay-per-click headaches. We'll take over revamping your listing. We'll pay a photographer to actually make your listing look even better for your images, and we'll do market research on figuring out what keywords will drive the most traffic to your page and redo the title, redo the bullet points. And then after, you know, after you've looked at that, you just kind of take a look at the whole package and say, you know, that's an option. We can go that route as well. And then I haven't had one person tell me, yes, I would like you to take over my Vendor Express account, because there's just so many advantages to moving away from Vendor Express,
right,
and selling it, you know, selling it through our own accounts. There are some advantages, still having a Vendor Express account, because you can potentially do some additional changes to the listings that they'll approve through a Vendor Express account. But overall, it's a very compelling argument that you can give to a brand to move them away from selling to Amazon, and that's what we've done in the past too.
Okay, and so then you do all those things that you say. What purchase quantity do you say to that guy? Because he's only sold 400 units. Now, he might have sold more to Amazon, but the conversation would be, you're going to be getting them back because they're not sold, right?
Exactly. So, okay. You know, we'll take a look at it and say, you know, maybe we'll buy 50, 60 units up front and say, you know, if we'll buy 50, 60 units up front, we'll make our changes. If we don't sell through this stuff faster than what you're seeing through Amazon, then, you know, after these 60 units are out, just go ahead and just start selling, send to Amazon again.
Right. Well, part company, no question.
Exactly. And pretty much 9 times out of 10, actually 10 times out of 10, they don't go back.
So how do you get Amazon to get rid of their whatever number of units they still have in stock?
They typically will sell through them. They won't actually do anything with it. So
that's the conversation. So you got to say how many more units you have in there, say 400. Okay, so let's let them sell through, and that should be about this length of time. And then we're in position. Are you modifying the existing listing, or are you creating a new listing?
Generally, we will modify the existing listing.
Okay.
And then if there are opportunities for us to partner up a specific product with another product we have from a different brand for bundles and those type of things, then we'll do that as well and create new listings for
and
it.
And that's something that Amazon won't do. So that's a great conversation to show an example of what.
Yep.
So you said in some cases you built a PowerPoint presentation. Have you built a portfolio that you would bring to a client to say, hey, here's Steve's XYZ glasses. We've done this for him. We took his sales from this, 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 and this. We've been able to deliver this. Here's Steve's contact information if you need to reach out to him. Have you gone that far?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. We have that. And we have, I'll actually take screenshots of what the Amazon listing will look like before we've even touched or done anything with it. And we'll save them in a nice little folder. And then we'll do afters so we can actually show before and after what the listing looked like before and what it looked like after.
In order to switch to that model, how long will it take somebody who is sitting there saying, you know, I'm tired of going to end caps at Target and scanning and this and that. I want to create a real wholesale business. How long is the process for someone to get to that level that you're describing?
To be able to do all of that, it really kind of depends on where you're coming from.
Okay.
Because the reason why I say that is because people are typically coming from two different angles. One of them is they've been doing retail arbitrage and online arbitrage, and they're used to just attaching themselves onto existing listings. That's all they do. And then you've got another angle where they're a little more creative, and maybe they've created some bundles. Maybe they've done some additional keyword research on some items. Maybe they've done a private label item or two, which means you've done market research. And so if you're a person who's actually done some of these things and have created creative bundles and done keyword research, that type of stuff, it's a much easier to move into doing these type of things I'm talking about, which is, you know, fixing listings and doing advertising, those type of things. But it doesn't necessarily mean that someone just straight up coming from arbitrage and is used to attaching listings can't do well, because there are a ton of manufacturers out there where all you have to do is have a conversation with them and show that you care about their brand and ask them questions about what their problems are. And let's say, for example, they tell you they have a problem that you just have no idea how to fix. Worst case scenario is you say, you know what? I'm going to take on your account and I'm going to figure it out. And so what you do is you take the account and you literally figure it out, whether that's having to hire someone to actually, you know, you outsource certain things you just don't know for now. It's one of those fake it till you make it type things where you figure it out and you make it happen.
Have you broken down, I know you have because you're a process guy, the steps that it takes to really improve a listing and to improve an account, all the different things you're going to do. How many items How many processes are there in that whole process you described where you went to that vendor and helped them get out of Vendor Express?
That particular one, I think I ended up breaking it down to maybe, maybe 25, 30 tasks.
Okay, so 25, 30 tasks, and some are harder than others, right? I mean, of course, and some of them are just simple because you've done them a million times. It gets pretty easy and repetitive. Okay, so they're bite-sized pieces, though. That's really the lesson there. That's really what it is, bite-sized.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just a matter of figuring out what the process is and going from there. Like I said, going into a supplier, everyone is potentially different. They all potentially have different problems, and it's just a matter of figuring out what those problems are and how you can actually solve them. And that's something that people just don't do.
No, they don't do it. They say they're going to do it, but they don't do it. Oh, I love it. Love it. Okay, so you are going wholesale, and you are offering to share that with other people.
Yeah, actually, what I've actually done is I've actually started to put together an Amazon wholesale sourcing training course.
And how much does this cost?
$0.
Wait, how much is my affiliate fee?
Your affiliate fee is $0.
$0. Oh, man.
It's 100% free.
Okay. And so, my theory on this stuff, okay, because I every once in a while somebody will give me some heat. You have to find the person that you connect with, right? I buy a lot of courses. I get a lot of courses for free. I have no problem with them. And I have no, that's me. Steve does who he likes. You, the listener, have to find out who you resonate with, who you can connect with, who you feel comfortable with. And if that's a paid course and they're buying you time, as Mitchell Lipp or Harvey Specter would call it, good for you. Do it, because you can jump the shark, right? You could jump ahead and you can really get up there. And if that's not you, then there are other options, and this is another option. So I don't want to, I'm not putting anybody down or, downplaying anybody else's courses or anything like that. Chris is bringing his own spin, and it's your way of doing wholesale, which is different than other people's, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I never say anything bad about other people running courses or doing things like that, because the reality is that as long as they're not some sort of snake oil salesman,
right?
Most courses that are out there do provide value. And so it's really just a matter of the consumer looking at, what they actually want to get out of it. And in most cases, if they actually do buy a course and they do follow what's said in it, generally they will come out ahead of what the price is for it. In this case, my price is $0.
So you're going to, you might get what you put into it, right? I mean, somebody could.
Yeah. The reality is that it's a very thought out course that has 8 modules of it. And I'm in the process of literally creating it right now. Mm-hmm. So as of we're speaking today, it has a total of 8 modules, and the first module is actually going to go live tomorrow. So by the time you actually hear this podcast, there may be 2 or 3 modules of those 8 already live. And all 8 modules should be fully completed on the website by mid to late February.
Okay. And what's the website's name?
I made it really easy. FreeWholesaleSystem.com.
FreeWholesaleSystem.com. Okay. So let's get the big elephant out of the room. What's in it for you?
Well, the reality is that I don't think anyone does this stuff for free. So I'm kind of taking the Pat Flynn approach to this, which if anyone's not familiar with Pat Flynn, he runs a very successful podcast, and he has a website, and his whole gist is he gives away lots of free content, but he makes his money on the back end by either selling services on the back end or through affiliate links.
Okay.
And so in this specific training course, I'm also offering different potential coaching packages as well that can be done with this, which is not necessary to actually take the course. If you literally were to go through the course, go through everything that's in it, you don't need anything else. Right.
So if you're self-taught, if you're self-guided, you're saying that you don't need you to be there.
Exactly. Okay. But for some people potentially want some additional handholding, want to make things go a little bit faster. I'm finally starting to offer some coaching services.
And so you'll charge for those, that your time is value, and you're saying, hey, if you need me, if you don't need me, no problem. But if you need me, I'm here for coaching, and I have a fee for that. Okay, that's fair.
Exactly. Just
as long as you're clear with people up front, there's no, then there's no, unexpected surprises. That's very fair. You also have another group called the Five Star
group.
Seller Society.
Five Star Seller Society. Ooh, I messed it up. I apologize. And what is that site?
That site is basically for high-level Amazon sellers that have that sell either over $100,000 per year or $10,000 for a three-month time, rolling time span.
And so, that's a paid site, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is. It is a paid site, and it comes with many different features we have on it. One of the biggest ones that we everyone seems to like are our question-answer sessions where we actually do Ask Me Anything sessions, and I'm starting to find people from outside of the Amazon space to come in and start doing Ask Me Anything sessions where you could potentially ask brand owners and other people questions about things that you just don't know about. So people like that, and then I actually do a monthly webinar for people of that group as well. And we've got a little over 100 members right now.
Oh, so wow. That's great.
Pretty good size group. And we actually started this over a year ago, pretty much around the time that we did the last podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Is when it started. So,
and what's the website address?
Five Star Seller Society.com.
Five with a five or a F-I-V-E? Yep.
Number five.
Okay. So number five, Star Seller
Society.com.
Society. Okay. Society. Yep. And I'll have a link to all that. I just want to make sure I got it right. So if somebody's listening, so. FiveStarSellerSociety.com. Okay. How much does it cost? I don't think we asked that.
As of right now, it is $29 per month, which as of February 1st, it's going up to $49.
Okay.
And that's not sales speak. It's literally going up to that price. But once we do go up to that price, we will be offering a little bit of a trial at that point. But, okay. So.
Okay. All right. So FreeWholesaleSystem.com is the free site. Again, be very clear that if you want more than what he's giving you for free, he's going to expect to get paid. Okay, and I think that's a great way that you're saying it. It's honest, it's upfront, and I have no problem with that.
When you actually go to the main page on there, which keep in mind that this is actually a redirect to my main website, but literally it says, you may be asking, why am I giving this information away for free? And I specifically tell you exactly why I'm doing it.
Okay. Well, you know what? I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate the candor. And people can, you know, ask. I'm looking at it right now. People can make their own choices, make their own decisions. And it's your lessons learned in business. That's a great – and there's Chris's story. So that's a great story. Okay. So I think we understand where you're going. Let's do one more thing, okay? Is I want to give people some advice on how to get past that point of stuck. I don't want to lose that because sometimes I get away from that. People are stuck. You know, they've gotten to that. They see you doing millions of dollars and they see others doing millions and they're stuck at that 30,000, that 300,000 number that I think is relatively easy to get to in Amazon. And they can't get past that. What's your advice? Give us one or two tips that you think somebody can do to get past that point.
Well, the kind of the way that I would look at is that it's almost like a roller coaster where there's going to be transition phases where, you know, you're first going up the hill and you're ridiculously excited and you just can't wait to get to the top. But then when you get to the top, then potentially you start going down really fast. It's a matter of are you going to be excited about it or are you going to start falling back and saying, oh my God, I don't know what to do? And that's when I think it is imperative to start talking to other people to help you through that. And so that would not be a time period where you need to shut down. You need to start looking for other people who can help you through that. So if you're stuck, it doesn't mean you got to come to me and talk to my coaching. I'm talking about there's tons of free Facebook groups. There's mentoring groups. I mean, there's so much free information out there and free people you can talk to and just go network at a conference. I mean,
absolutely.
There's just so many options for you to be able to network with other people and talk with other people. And a lot of these people have the same exact problems as you do. And a lot of them can walk you through exactly what you need to do to help you through this. Right. You don't have to pay me or anyone else. It's just having the networking and just don't shut yourself off in a closet. Get yourself out there and actually start talking to people.
That's it. Put yourself out there. That's the key, right? You can't be a wallflower. You got to go up and say, hey, Chris Green, I'm Steve. I, you know, appreciate everything you've done. Could I ask you a question? That's what you have to do. And Chris is such a great guy. He will answer those questions, right? Walk up and see Chris Potter. You can't miss him because he's 8 foot tall. And you say, hey, Chris, I'm Steve, you know, and that's really what it takes, right? I mean, it really is. That's just such sound advice. Put yourself out there. Love it. Love it. Love it. All right. One more.
One more. Oh, I wasn't expecting to have to get.
I know. I'm going to ask you a second. Well, because you, yeah, it was really good. No, it really is, and that's. I mean, that's another mic dropper right there because it's really, it's not easy. You know, it isn't easy. I mean, I understand the uncomfortableness, especially when you go into a big room and you're crowded and you can see these other people clearly know each other and you're somebody brand new. But get past that. Most people, all the people that I've interviewed, they like to help people. You hear them. They're real. They're genuinely real people who like to help people. And so please take advantage of that and go up and ask them. And ask them about their business. They'll love to tell you. So, all right, give me one more. I'm going to hold you to it.
All right, so another one would be is to just start reading some books and do some, get some exercise. You know, something I started doing is I started doing the Miracle Morning.
Walk us through that. What's that?
What my Miracle Morning personally looks like is I will wake up in the morning for about for 30 minutes, and I will do a little bit of meditation in the morning first thing. Then I do some affirmations where I'll literally write down things that I want to do long term. So like one of the things I literally write down every single morning is I will have a $10 million business in 2019. And then I visualize what that's going to look like. So I sit there and I literally close my eyes and I think about what steps I need to take and what that would look like in 2019, what the $10 million business would look like. And then I actually re-look at my goals for today that I had previously set from the previous night. And then after that, I actually then go into approximately an hour of working on my highest priority task. So that way I totally knock out my highest priority task before I do anything. After that, I eat a little bit of breakfast. And then after that, I'm going to the gym and I'll go there for about an hour. And then I come back, take my shower, get dressed for the day. And then I head to the warehouse and office and I'm good to go. So by the time I even get to the office, I've already exercised. I've already told myself that I'm awesome. and I've also went ahead and made sure I got my number one task done that I needed to work on for today. And that's even before I even talk to anyone else, anyone else that could potentially sidetrack or derail my day.
And you're not reading emails. You're not looking at Facebook. You're not doing any of those things because you have specific. Now you could, right, after all that. But before then, that's all out of your head because you're focused on what you're going to do. Love it.
Yep.
Oh, dude.
Yep.
That is the best power tip you gave right there, because that is working on yourself, and I think that's the best advice somebody could give. So, man, somebody wants to reach out to you. So I'm going to direct them to the freewholesalesystem.com, because that's where it is. There's a contact me button up in the top right-hand corner. You'll see Chris's story. It's all his story, and he lays it out there for you, and it's absolutely worth reading. Again, go back and listen to episode 44. Man, I can't wait to see you this year. I'm sure we'll see each other at a couple events. I wish you nothing but success. I appreciate you taking the time, and I'm really excited about your training course. Really, I can't wait to be in it. I'll be in it.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. You know, I'm so fortunate that I get to do these interviews, to get to talk to people like Chris who are working on their life. I hope every one of you take that seriously. I know some of it sounds corny to some people or whatever, but you know, I applaud him. I think he's right on. I think exactly what I think the same way he does. I think you have to speak those things into your life because there's so much negativity out there. There's so much stuff. It's so much junk, and you have to filter that out. And so by taking charge that first hour and a half, 2 hours of his morning, he is starting his day the right way, man. And I tell you, I just applaud it. I hope you take advantage of that and use that information, because that's probably going to give you the best return of any other investment you can make. Invest in yourself. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce momentum podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.